Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. This week, we talk to another manager who's had a season he will never forget. After being relieved of his duties at his last club in October, he then found himself appointed within a few weeks at his current club, only days before their own huge FA Cup game. From there, it's been all on the up. Currently top of the Northern Premier League, he leads his Buxton side into 2 games this Easter weekend, including a big local derby on Monday. And he knows that 2 wins may not even be enough to stop the title decision going down to the final game of the season. Steve Cunningham is philosophical and taking one game at a time, but looking forward to the challenge. Next up, a man who's planned the Manx assault on English football for years, but didn't expect to see it move so swiftly or so successfully. Steve Burns once coached the Isle of Man national side. He's now got a slightly different role overseeing the media plans and output of the club, and he's as successful off the field as the side are on it. This weekend, it's the playoff final as the club aim to convert their second place finish into promotion from step 6 to step 5 in front of a bumper 3,000 capacity crowd. Rounding off the show, it's Matt Badcock, editor-at-large at the Non-League paper, on the move for some of the big stories this week and those over the weekend as he plans the Easter issue of Non-League's favourite read. Plenty to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So imagine being the manager at the top of the table 3 games to go after a very gruelling season, but your nearest rivals are breaking your neck just 2 points behind. And just add to that scenario, let's make one of those games a local derby against a side currently 3rd in the table. No, it's not a textbook question from the latest FA coaching course. It's real life for our next guest. So let's speak to a man who has 2 games this weekend as he seeks to keep his side at the top of the Northern Premier League. Manager at Buxton, Steve Cunningham. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Steve.
Yeah, good evening. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm good. Now, first up, a trip to Mickleover on Saturday, and that won't be easy. How's the squad faring in terms of injuries and availability, but being the Easter holidays as well? Because I know that a number of non-league managers are facing team selection availability for the first time in many years.
Yeah, well, I think that's obviously due to the fact that obviously COVID has probably played a part of that for the last 2 years as well, where holidays have been scratched and everybody's take advantage of those breaks now that they're able to get away. I think we're a bit fortunate, as you've mentioned there, we're very much in the promotion race, and anybody who took a holiday now probably wouldn't be invited back in the summer. So they've got no choice but to be available. And we've got a tough game on Saturday against Mickleover. A bit of a dead rubber on paper, but they won't see it as that. They'll see that they can, you know, spoil the party for a team, and they've obviously got the home game, so they've got a duty to their fan base and their board, who obviously still pay wages and expenses. Mm. So it's a very tough game, and we've obviously what comes with that game for us and the pressure around it. But in terms of the squad going into it, fit and healthy, apart from Chris Dawson, who got an injury in his last game. Unfortunately, that's going to rule him out now for the rest of the season, and we're a bit gutted about that one, because he's certainly been, in my time here, in contention for player of the season. So absolutely gutted for him, but hopefully we can do him justice and all the lads perform for him on Saturday.
Yeah. Now, back in December, we spoke to your counterpart at Matlock, Paul Phillips, about this big derby as it is. It's going to be there on Easter Monday. Following that show, they came out 2-1 winners in the reverse fixture and took top spot. I guess you'll be hoping for the continued non-league show. Good luck in that sense. But do you prepare any differently for that big Easter Monday game, knowing that they're the opposition?
No, we've not even thought about that one, to be honest. And I know that sounds cliche. Our biggest game of the season is on Saturday, it's Mickleover, and that's all we can concentrate on. With it being so tight with our nearest rivals being Sale Shields, they've got a tough game on Saturday themselves away at FC United. We've got to make sure we do the job. If we were to focus on Monday, whether that's team selection, emotional decisions, and also arrogance of playing Mikel over, we're going to get beat Saturday. Mm. So we're purely concentrating on the Saturday game. We get through that. If the lads perform and do the job as they, as we expect them to do and what they're capable of doing, we can get a result. Then come 5 o'clock, the result at FC and South Shields might determine what we do with our squad come Monday. Mm. But the biggest game of the season for us on Saturday. And then what we'll do is we'll see who's fit and available come 5 o'clock on that day. And no doubt about it, if we're very much in a race, I'm pretty certain those little niggles aren't there. People have got that little extra buzz and we'll probably still have, I wouldn't say a fully fit squad, but certainly a very enthusiastic group that want to play on the Monday in a game of that magnitude. You know, if I take my neutral cap off and a supporter and put that cap on, then yeah, it's a massive game in terms of local area, big derby. No doubt there'll be 2,000 fans on like there was at Matlock. It was a great spectacle for the league. Obviously, we've got a duty to our fans that we owe them a bit of a revenge and get a bit of bragging rights back over this side of the Dales. But like I said, as much as it's a great game and one that we're all looking forward to, we certainly can't be looking past Mikel over yet.
Yeah, and all three of your games, I guess, is going to be lots to play for. Certainly for your guys, you know, even as you say, just to be part of the squad for next season, it's going to be fiery, and you know, the weather's going to be hot. It's going to be different. Is it going to be a case of you trying to stay on top of those lads and keeping their heads the best that they can to get the best results in these three games going forward?
Yeah, I mean, we've been we've had a turning point since the Morpeth game. We've only lost one in our last 14 games, and that date is back to January when we played Morpeth. You know, we've had 9 clean sheets in 11 games. We're very much one game at a time mentality since Morpeth, and we said that teams would drop points. We dropped them, but we always believed in ourselves. The performances were still there. There was doubters. There was obviously a lot of niggles and a lot of noise from outside of our camp, and that happens. That's football at all levels, Premier League all the way down to ours and below. But we've kept our head in, and something that we did was we looked at certain things that weren't working. We added a little bit of firepower to the team in terms of the defensive unit, a bit more in terms of the attacking team. And then when you've got your players coming back like Diego, Wardy, you know, we have big players missing who contributed to large portions of the goal contributions. They're back now, and, you know, that's no secret that they've played a big part from the attacking side. So Newton and Dan Cowan coming into the back line, and like I said, I mean, 2 goals in the last 13 games we've conceded. It's a huge achievement for them. So with that in mind, we'll just approach Saturday exactly as we've done for the last 13 games, same on Monday and same on the Saturday. The following Saturday now. There is a lot more pressure with each game. We know that. And the spectators will be looking at the phones and they'll be twitching and looking out for any little niggles that are coming from the South Shields FC game and so on with Matlock. But for us, we've just got to keep calm, keep collected, just keep doing what we're doing on the football pitch, and everything around us will take care of itself.
Yeah, and yourself, you as a manager, you've got plenty of experience and knowledge of big games. We remember you from Carl and Curzon Ashton, but you've also got, as you mentioned, there's some great experience among your players. Is it times like these that those players really do come into their own?
They do. They do in terms of experience of what they've been involved in. But when we went through the dressing room last week, when I talked, I like to do a little bit of motivational talking when I'm in the dressing room. And I asked the question, you know, how many of you have actually won a league? You know, they've won one league. I mean, Ben Turner's been playing football for 17 years and he's won one league. So that doesn't tell you that he's got loads of experience in these moments. Yeah, they've been at the top level, same with Jamie Ward, one league win. Ryan Taylor, one league win. Now, he's out injured, so he won't be playing. But we can draw on their experience. But I think sometimes what goes away is we've got a lot of young, hungry players that, you know, you don't often get the chance to win things in football. Mm. And one of the hardest things to win is a league over 42 games with everything that goes around it, especially with COVID and everything that's been going on the last couple of seasons. The distractions with work, family life, non-league, to win a league, it's very, very difficult. And we're so close that the players can, You know, they can feel it, they can taste it, and if that enthusiasm doesn't drive you on, sometimes experiencing those moments doesn't really matter. It's on the day. Can you step up to the plate? And the one thing that we have got at the moment is a dressing room that's stacked with real quality. There's a real hungriness about them that they want to achieve things. And to make a long season all worthwhile, they've got three games to go and lay it all out there on the field. And if they do that, they're going to do what not many people can do in a lifetime of, you know, football. And that's win that league. And, you know, I fully believe that this group is capable. We certainly won't take it for granted just because we've got the experience and the quality and the dressing room that we have. You know, will nerves play a part? No doubt about it. It's like when you go for a job interview, you know, your nerves, your hands are sweating. And that's what they'll be like on each game. But I'm sure that we'll come good.
Yeah. Interesting. You mentioned the Morpeth game there, because I always say that the seasons always turn on a bit of luck, a little bit of magic, a certain moment. And I was looking back, and I was thinking maybe it was February, because I remember you praising the stack of volunteers who came out to help to sweep the snow off the pitch, and it was a real club effort, and it seemed to sort of like garner everybody, but behind all the players and that sort of thing. I think you won 1-0 against Gainsborough Trinity and went top as well on the back of it. In a single day, everything just clicked like to perfection. Did you maybe sense the same?
Yeah, 100%. We really wanted that game on. We'd just come off the back of beating Hyde as well, I think it was, the game before it. And we really wanted that game on against Gainsborough. Not because of where they were in the league. We'd just lost 5-6. Social media, noises in and around the terraces, other fans, as you'd expect. You know, after the start that we made when we first come into the hot seat, the FA Cup distraction, there was a lot going on. And you just needed that little bit of luck, or like you say, just something as a turning point. And when you see the chairman and the board of directors and supporters alike all shoveling snow off the pitch, you wouldn't have believed that the game was going to be on. We had lads struggling to even get to the ground. And then when we got here, they all said, "What's going on here? Why are we doing this?" And then the result was a band of people coming together. The result, 3 points. And all of a sudden, you start in a run that we were on, and it just galvanised the club. And fair play to the chairman; he rewarded all the supporters with a sponsors' day last week or 2 weeks back. Nice. In the boardroom. You know, all being looked after, and that's the kind of thing that you need. And the support from the fans has been unbelievable the last few weeks. Certainly in my time, it's just getting bigger and better.
Yeah, because you came in difficult circumstances following the dismissal of Gary Hayward and Mark Ward. Just days before that FA Cup game against York, and you're in the midst of a battle now. But whatever the outcome, this is really, it's been one of those years in your life that Hollywood probably couldn't even script.
Yeah, it's certainly been that, I'll tell you that. But what I would say is I never doubted myself and what the players could do. We came into the hot seat knowing that I wanted to go straight back into the league that I'd come from. I was given a great opportunity to do that. The players have backed me. We're in a great position. And hopefully we can reward everyone that supported us, from the chairman, the board, the supporters, my management staff that I joined when I first come, the players themselves. Collectively, if we can just perform for them 3 games, all of that would have been worth it. And then there's just another chapter to write on the story of Brixton Football Club.
Yeah, and I said it had been a really grueling season, and I can't remember a tighter season in the Northern Premier League, and I've been doing this thing for too many decades. But the strength in depth of clubs throughout the division has been that no results of pure shocks, and I think you've sort of intimated that, you know, with the Mickleover game coming up. Anybody can beat anybody else. As a manager looking to be the best, surely that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, the actual quality of the league, it's hard to explain. There's no easy game, and I know people say that as a cliche. But when you look at the opportunity that clubs probably see that they've got to step up into the National League, which again is another level completely, it's up to everybody's game, and everybody talks about budgets, and everyone knows, look, Buxton isn't shy of advertising the fact that it supports its players and the club with the infrastructure. Everything it's trying to do at the moment is to grow as a football club, backed by a chairman that's very enthusiastic about his local community football club, and he does it for a reason. But then you've also got 3 or 4 other clubs then that have decided, well, we'll do the same. And all of a sudden every game just gets harder and harder.
the quality of player is superb in the league. And then you've got managers like Kevin Phillips, you know, coming in. So, yeah, it's a tough league. You want to test yourself against the best. And over the 42 league games, that's pretty much whoever sits on top will prove to be the best team. Whether that's the best manager, I'm not too sure. I'll always say that's me anyway. But no, it's a testament to the league and the quality of it and the players and the management staff that's in that division as well.
Well, you've certainly been making a great fist of it. Steve Cunningham, best of luck at the weekend. You know, two games over the year to break, never easy. We look forward to seeing what the final results are and look forward to speaking to you again on the Non-League Football Show very soon.
Brilliant. Oh, thanks for your support and coverage, guys, and speak to you again soon.
So let's have a chat with a side for whom it's been a fabulous season already, but for Easter Saturday could lead to just another magical storyline. On Saturday, it is the playoff final of the Northwest Counties League Division 1 North, and our next guest will be hoping his FC Isle of Man side will be victors to move from step 6 to step 5 in their inaugural full season. It's a warm welcome to Steve Burns, the media man at FC Isle of Man. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Steve.
Thanks very much, Tim, and thanks for having us on. If I could just go, we're actually playing in the Division 1 South playoff.
And that's why I knew I needed to speak to you, because of your accuracy. If anybody doesn't know, Steve, I mean, if there's anything to do with the media, and particular football media on the Isle of Man, I think Steve seems to be behind it somewhere, or at least had a hand in it. As I said, it's already been an historical season. Most clubs come on here and they talk about a five-year plan. 5 years ago, the idea of FC Isle of Man was little more than, pub talk, I guess, wasn't it? I think it wasn't until late summer 2018 that there were even preliminary discussions, and I know we spoke about it on this show, preliminary discussions with the FA were 4 years ago. So even reaching the playoff final is fairly remarkable.
Absolutely, and you're right. It was pub talk for a long, long time, going back to all my time. I coached with the national team, I managed the national team. A lot of the players that are in our team now work with me, and we did a piece actually with a couple of the older players the other week, and we were just talking about that, with how all we did was talk about it for 5, 6, 7 maybe longer years, and now it's happened. And you're right, I mean, we started off just as an embryonic idea in 2018. It took some traction through the following summer of 2019, and by 2020 we had a club up and running.
You did. I mean, July 2020, the club formally placed in the Northwest Counties League by the FA, but by September of 2020, that league suspended, and the much anticipated move into the English Pyramid. Well, did you fear it might never happen? You might never get a season under your belt.
I'd be lying if I said we didn't think it. We seem to have so much going against us, and with the COVID situation, especially with the border restrictions coming into the island, it just didn't look as if it was going to happen. And we were initially, the Northwest Counties League initially suspended us because we wouldn't have been able to fulfil our fixtures just for that season. But ultimately, they had to cancel the whole league. So we started again at the beginning of this season.
Yeah, and now, 38 matches completed, a second place finish, and you secure a 3-0 win over Withenshaw Amateurs in the playoff semis. The setup, in playoff terms, I guess, is the perfect final against third place New Mills. The script is surely written already.
Yeah, I just don't know what that script says, to be honest with you, Tim. We're taking nothing for granted. We've come a long way in a very short time. And funny, I was saying to the manager this morning something similar, and he says, "Don't you dare predict anything." We're not going to, Chris and his team are just not going to take anything for granted. None of us in the club are. It's going to be a tough game. We've played New Mills twice this season, and both of them have been humdingers of a game.
We've reported earlier on in the season about that various complaints over the difficulties in travelling during the COVID time to games at yours. I'm guessing they're not going to have the same difficulties this weekend and everybody be at the final.
No, at the end of the month, last month, sorry, all border restrictions to the island were lifted, so everybody can come and go. I mean, since October time, when we first had our first home game against Brockton at the end of October, border restrictions weren't that bad, although people coming into the island did have to complete a landing card to show that they'd been double vaxxed, etc., etc. And that's why we were able to fulfil all our home fixtures without problem. But it's a lot easier now since 1st of April. It's back to pre-COVID times.
Yeah. So here we are, and Saturday sees a 3,000 sellout at the Bowl, and is it the biggest game of football the Isle of Man has ever seen?
Yes, I think so. We had a couple of big games with the national team in the last 10, 15 years, but I think as an actual event, this is on a different scale. We probably could have sold this game out two or three times over if we'd had the capacity to do so. But just in the terms of it's a Manx club playing in the English League for the first time, it's just a massive event. It's going to be a massive game, and that's why we've had such a big following all season.
Yeah, and you're 6:30 Saturday evening kickoff. There'll be, live broadcast TV. There'll be lots of media interest in the game, at least. What about the buzz around the island?
Yeah, it's amazing. We put the tickets on sale at 9 o'clock on Monday night. The first tranche, and that was thick end of 2,500 tickets, and they'd all gone with it by 11 o'clock that night. It's been that was the sort of impact the club has had and the sort of interest that we so gratefully generated. It's been phenomenal. Everybody's talking about it. Obviously, we're all amateurs in the workplace. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody wants to know how we're going to get on, how we feel we're going to get on, have we got any spare tickets. The uptake has just been amazing, but it's been like that all season, to be honest with you. We had well over 2,000 fans for our first home game against Brockton, as I say, back in October, and we've gone over the 2,000 mark on about three other occasions since then as well. So, yeah, the Manx public have really got behind it. It's a completely new venture. Obviously, it's different, and I think that one of the reasons why people have taken to it, but just seeing local players who they're all aware of, but just playing against in a much higher standard of football week in, week out, has certainly attracted people to come and watch us.
And has that remained? Because that was always one of the key things from the outset, was that it would give local players the opportunity to play in the English Pyramid. Is everybody from the island and living and working locally?
Yes, we've got a couple of Manx students, obviously, so local lads, but they went to, they're in their first year at university, so they've played a few games. They've helped us off the bench. They've been bench players at a couple of games, so we've not had to, I'm sure you're aware, Tim, obviously we have to cover all our own costs to go. So if we can take two of the students who were over there who trained with us during the summer and played some of the early games in the season, if we can use them to come along and help us out, it means that we don't have to pay for two or three players on the plane or the boat and so on. Then we've done that. But they're all Manx lads. They're all officially Manx residents, yes.
And before you kicked a ball in the Pyramid, there was such great talk of the wider benefits of football across the Isle of Man by the side being able to play in the English Pyramid. Have you already seen those benefits filtering through? You said about the crowds, but there was a big sort of push towards encouraging young kids to get involved and want to play football.
Yeah. We have our own summer camps now. Well, not summer, I say soccer camps rather than summer camps, but we've just finished one today at a location down south. So it's all FC Isle of Man branded. Our players pool their comp tickets every week and we gift them to local schools or local junior clubs, and we invite the chosen club or school that week to come to the game free of charge. We have a penalty competition with them at halftime. And we've just got so many young people who have been inspired by our players, to be honest with you. Players like Sean Doyle, who scored 40 league goals in the Northwest Counties League this year. he is now a mini superstar on the Isle of Man. I mean, I wouldn't say he's up there with the likes of cyclist Mark Cavendish or people like that, but he's suddenly become a face, as a lot of the players have, and they've taken to it well. They are now really adept at dealing with media, dealing with public appearances, and of course they're all volunteers. They do it for the love of it. They feel a responsibility to the community. It's not just about playing football, it's about giving something back to the community, which I think we've done, and the community seem to have given it back to us in droves on Saturday nights.
What about for you? Because you touched on it there that you've been involved in football on the island for I won't say how many years, but one of the reasons I was particularly wanted to get you on, you've done a great piece on the club's website about the Band of Brothers, and it's a conversation with you, and some of the other lads that Chris Bass and
Sean Quay. Yeah. Well, I've worked with Chris when I was coaching and managing them. Both those lads were part of my team. Sean was my captain, and when we went with England to the UEFA regions in 2014, Chris was my captain for that because Sean was injured. And it was the basis for the chat, really. We just wanted to review, well, look back and think all the times we've talked about this happening, going over what I said at the start of this conversation now, with just what their experiences have been, how they have viewed the FC Isle of Man experience compared to everything they did with their national team. They were also part of Ellen Bannon, which was part of the organization, the CONIFA, with the Football World Cup and a couple of football European championships for non-FIFA nations. So those lads have been through all that. They've had magnificent success with their local club, a club called St. George's here on the Isle of Man, which our manager Chris Bass was also manager of. That's Chris Bass Jr.'s father. I know all of them as well. I've worked with them an awful lot over the years, and it's great. Although I've got a different role now, it's great to be part of this and experiencing it with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and even in your wildest dreams, did you think that it would be this successful from the off?
Personally, I knew we'd have a chance, but we were taking a little bit back the first month, the quality of the teams we were playing against. And I wouldn't say we struggled. We struggled to win games. We drew, I think, three out of our first four, 1-1, and then we lost two at the end of August to Abbey Hay and to West Didsbury, and it was a bit of a wake-up call. But since then, the lads have learned. Obviously, the more you play at this level, hopefully you become a better player and a better team, and that's what they've done. And we've only lost those two games at the back end of August, and we've only lost two league games since. The last league game we lost was on 18th of December against Sandbach. So the lads have had to adapt. The other biggest thing, Tim, that they've had to adapt to is the sheer amount of games. They're not used to playing 38 league games a season. They're used to playing 20, 22 league games at max with a couple of cup competitions. And you might get a week off here, a week off there. It's been relentless. And the commitment and the drive of the players has just been nothing short of sensational.
Yeah, and as you say, they're all working as well elsewhere. So it's the standard, non-league where football sort of takes over, but you've got other commitments elsewhere. But I'd imagine the travel has taken a bit out of them as well.
They adapted really well to that as well, to be honest with you, because it created a bond. Because when we started out with our first game at Main Road, it was like going away with the national team. So they'd all signed. It was our first league game. But they'd all come from different local clubs from different parts of the island. And while that was familiar, I think Chris Bass Jr. said it in the interview that I did with him a couple of weeks ago. He said we were only getting together once a month or once every 6 weeks. Then we'd only play games or tournaments at the end of every season. There was very few matches, but now they were forced into a situation where they were playing competitive games every Saturday, and with a few midweek games thrown in as well. So they quickly bonded as a club, and it was through that travel, because they hadn't spent so much time together on the boat, on the plane, and an overnight stay on the bus. You know, it actually really helped us create a club atmosphere quicker than what it might have been if we were playing intermittent home games at that time. While it was a pain for us, we'll make no bones about that, but we had to do it. But it actually helped us create a good club bond between everyone, not just the players, but all the periphery staff as well.
Yeah, and as you say, you know, the restrictions have gone now, but to be able to achieve that during COVID restrictions as well, you know, bodes well for the future going forward. So, big game on Saturday then, Steve. Are you going to be able to enjoy the game? Have you got any pre-match routines? I mean, this really is sort of the whole project sort of coming to a head.
Yeah, are you talking about, am I going to enjoy it, Tim?
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, I don't think I've enjoyed a game all season. Not like three or four up at half time or with half an hour to go. Every game is tense, and we've had something riding on every game, even going into the Abbey Halton game on the 2nd of April, where we still had to win to secure second place, which would give us home field advantage for these playoffs. So there's always been something riding on it. And as I said, every game has been so competitive. There's very few games where we've run away with it. So I probably won't enjoy it. Not until I know what the final score is at 8:30 on Saturday night. And hopefully that's if we've won. It's a cliche, but it has been a roller coaster.
Yeah, it is a cliche. It's very much a cliche of non-league football. The people that bring us non-league football and make sure that it happens week in, week out, we do enjoy it, but probably not as much as we'd like to enjoy it, maybe. Steve Burns, best of luck at the weekend. Well, congratulations to everybody on the Isle of Man for the achievements this year. And hopefully we'll speak to you again on the non-league football show very soon.
Thanks very much, Tim, and thanks for having us on. Appreciate it. Thank you.
So let's round off this week's news. It's time once again to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Editor at large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thanks, Tim. I'm back.
You are?
COVID isolation, I'm back.
You've got another chapter for the autobiography, really, to write, haven't you? I mean, we keep talking to all these managers and talking about success from adversity. Is this it now? Is this Matt Badcock's move from adversity into success?
I don't realize what adversity is, these managers. This is me. I'm back. This is a story. This is the beginning of the story. The next chapter.
Well, it's not quite the big story of the week, but maybe if you manage to find some diesel or a diesel petrol station that's open that's got some diesel, that might be the story of the season. But potentially one of the big stories of the season, that managerial merry-go-round, it might be nearing the end of the season and the player signing deadline might have passed, but there's still managers going in and out and revolving doors. This week, Russ O'Neill and Marcus Bignot placed on gardening leave at Guiseley. They're currently bottom of the National League North. We've got former manager at Guiseley, Steve Kitterick. He's been brought back in for Guiseley. I think they've got six matches to go. A massive game ahead this weekend as well, because they're hosting second place Gateshead. In a way, you can see why the change has been made, but so late on in the day, it does seem maybe not perfect timing.
Yeah, I think it's one of the last kind of roll of the dice for Guiseley. Steve's obviously come in, and then less than 24 hours later, gone and got 3 points. It's always funny how that kind of pans out, and in that National League North, that's a good win against Kettering, obviously, going into the you thought that table was so tight, you thought there's a whole handful of clubs you couldn't be eyeing up seven spot there, so Kettering are one of them. There's some good results recently under Ian Colehouse, so there's a vital win, and it kind of just keeps everybody down there. You thought they'd maybe were sort of creeping away from the relegation zone, sort of pulls them back a little bit as well, so it's kind of given them a a fighting charge, and someone like Steve Kittrick, who not only knows non-league and his way around management, has had lots of success, he's had it at Geisel as well, so he knows the club well, obviously won the promotions in the past, and a fantastic job there and part of their sort of rise back up the pyramid. And he's kind of going in there, and you know exactly what you need to do, and that's just win games of football. And the start not too bad on that front.
Indeed, and if you, it's all about getting the best out of the players that he's got at hand as well, because you can't bring anybody else in. So, we talk about the modern day manager maybe not being the man motivators that they had to be in the past. They may have to be like social workers and everything else on it, but now is the time for your man motivation skills to come to the fore.
Yeah, that's it. It's kind of going back to kind of very basic. Just finding ways to win. To win, and that's Steve's done that a lot throughout his career, and had lots of success, and he knows what will be what's required. And you know, guys in recent years have been thinking of trying to get back up into the top flight, and it's not so easy from that sort of point of view. But you know, the last thing they want to be going down, but it's such a tough division that National League North, and there's so much to play for all over the place in these last sort of few games that there's going to be lots of twists and turns. There's a lot riding on the remaining fixtures.
Yeah, also departing from the dugout with immediate effect, Mike Cook at Chippenham Town down in the National South, and Gary Horgan taking over as the interim man there. But the other sort of big managerial news was in the Isthmian Premier, Rob Small has announced that he's to leave Bowes and Pitsea at the end of the season after, 8 very successful years there. It looks like he's looking for a new challenge.
Yeah, I think when Rob went in at Bowes, they were kind of bottom of the Essex Senior League, and struggling. Not kind of a club that you think a few years later would be planning a trade at step three. I remember speaking to him a few years ago, kind of came across him probably a few years ago when they were going well in the league that year, and they got to the FA Bar semi-final. And he's a young, ambitious manager. He speaks really well. And said himself he didn't have the tools to make it as a player, but certainly as a manager, he's been doing really well with his staff there. It's sort of like how much he kind of puts into it, and you can see that in their success. You know, it's turned from a club that's kind of not doing much, just sort of creating all these bits of history. They obviously got promoted to step four. I didn't quite make the FA Bar semi-final that year, but got promoted to step four, and they sort of had the playoffs as well that they missed out on. Their promotion to step three, and they've managed to stay there. And this year there was another milestone when they reached it all the way, only a late goal, sort of saw them lose that at the league one side. So there's been all these different milestones, and he's not spoken to him since he's made the decision. But you can tell that it's been an emotional one for him. You know, the club's meant a lot to him and kind of what they've achieved. But yeah, it was obviously his time for a change and time to move on and seek a new challenge, because he's an ambitious guy.
Yeah, and I think a young manager still, by modern terms, and he's got that record behind him as well. I'm sure he'll be a much in demand manager with the pick of a couple of places the new season or come the end of this season, when there may be some more vacancies, more local to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Imagine that would be very, very swiftly in a new job, and looking to find that club that can hopefully help him make that next step from his own point of view. But you know, Bowers leaves him in a good place. You know, it can always be good be beneficial to clubs to have a change as well, generally. And maybe it's part of a new cycle for Bowers as well.
Indeed, indeed. You mentioned Bowers' FA VAR's exploits in previous times. We now know the kickoff times for non-league finals day on Sunday, May the 22nd at Wembley. Kickoff in the FA VAR's final between Newport Pagnell Town and Littlehampton Town will be 12:15 p.m. So just after the midday bite there, and in the trophy final, Bromley Wrexham is a 4:15 p.m. kickoff. It's always a day that we both look forward to. And for fans too, both of the clubs and the neutrals, because I think tickets are on sale via the clubs and the FA website already.
Yeah, it's a code that you said you were sort of doing that second game. But hopefully a bit warmer this great, but I think it's 20 adults, so. For two games, and then we did two brilliant games. I think we saw at Wrexham, we've already sold about 10,000 tickets in their first 24 hours of their tickets going on sale, and you can see sort of among all the four clubs kind of that excitement about what it is. And one occasion I sort of saw some of the Littlehampton on their sort of social media tweeting from Wembley. I think yesterday obviously went to their club's meeting to find out all about it and what's going to go on. And having a little look around, looking at the change rooms, and generally taking in the surroundings and where they're going to be in just over a month's time. So yeah, really exciting. I'm expecting a really good crowd, really big crowd there on May the 22nd. And it should be two fascinating games as well.
Yeah, Wrexham are probably, obviously have one eye on that trophy final, but one eye still on the National League as well. I think the National League, it's not over, but that 8-point lead for Stockport probably means that the big prize is gone, but everybody will be chasing and trying to finish as high as possible for that playoff advantage, including Wrexham, who they've got a game in hand over FC Halifax and Solihull Moors, and indeed Chesterfield and Notts County and Grimsby. And Dagenham below them, who are chasing them for that second spot. But they're going to need to continue getting the results that they have been in recent weeks. Good Friday, I was trying to remember what the name of the Friday was. It's Bank Holiday Good Friday, because we have National League games on Friday and Monday this weekend. On Friday, a tough one at home to Solihull Moors, who themselves are chasing maybe second spot, but certainly as high up as possible in the playoffs.
Yeah, Wrexham have been sort of kings of the late drama the last few weeks, and they've lost, come back against Dover and Lake Hill in Stockport, and then Lake Hill winner last week as well against Eastleigh. They certainly doesn't happen by accident, scoring goals like that so late on, so it shows what they're all about. And I think the Stockport against Southend was the late game, and it was kind of like an over to you Stockport, kind of what can you do, can we sort of put the pressure on, and Stockport come out and wallop Southend 5-0, shows what they're all about as well. So yeah, I mean, it's literally Stockport to lose at the moment. If someone like Dave Challoner in charge, you can't see, and the players they've got there, you kind of can't see that slip off. I mean, crazy things, I guess, have happened. But from everybody else's point of view, Wrexham's point of view, they've got to keep trying to get those games, and just in case there is a little slip up. It's the same for the clubs. I think I saw a quote from Gary Johnson. So for the clubs to chase the playoffs, I saw a quote from Gary Johnson last week saying you need a bit of luck, but you need to be ready to be lucky, and you need to be in the right position. There's no point you can't rely on luck and then not be there, just kind of take advantage of it. So that's what they're trying to do. Everyone's trying to just get to those last playoff spots and be in that shake-up. It kind of doesn't matter when you get in them, as long as you're in there by the final whistle on that last day of the season. And then it's, we kind of seen in the past how open the playoffs can be. So, yeah, lots to play for this weekend, and a big doubleheader over the Easter weekend that will really will sort of, by the time we get through it, we'll have a very good idea of what's going to happen in the final weeks, I should think.
Yeah. you know, any, you say anything can happen. And I say, you know, Wrexham are at home to Solihull Moors on Good Friday. And then on Monday, Solihull Moors then have to go to Stockport County. So, you know, they're sitting fourth. They're thinking, you know, we've got a really good chance to finish high up in the playoffs. And then they have to play the teams that are first and second in the table. So, I don't think anybody's got an easy run in, but it's still plenty of time for the top of the table there and those even who's in the playoffs to change between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's, again, speaking about it before, but the extension of the playoffs down to seventh has kind of just put so much more on the season. You know, you can argue about it, it's six teams in the playoffs and you can go up down to seventh. I think that's happened in the National League. I know it's happened in Step 2, but you know, it does. It just keeps seasons going, it keeps seasons alive, it keeps interest, and that's important. I mean, I think when I first got announced, I must admit, I was a little bit sceptical. You're going down, how far do you keep going down down the table? But it does add to the sort of excitement at the end of the season. I mean, the playoffs aren't fair generally anyway, because that's what playoffs are by their nature. You know, the team throughout the season who's gets the most points doesn't necessarily go up through the playoffs. So it does add a lot more. It's kept a lot of seasons alive, and it'll be really intriguing final couple of weeks. You know, even if it's sort of Bournemouth and Bromley, who had sort of difficult little runs and they've kind of dropped away, but they've still got that chance of getting in there if they can win that sort of, get some points on it.
Yeah. At the bottom of the table, I spoke with John Couch last week about the, you know, Kings Lynn revival that was going on there. But I have to think that the draw against Yeovil last weekend, whilst it was a great point, it might not be enough now for their survival. Aldershot still games in hand above them, and I'm looking at Kings Lynn's sort of next run of games. Notts County, Grimsby Town and Dagenham and Redbridge. Just all within the, you know, a space of, 10 days. You know, it's still tight there. Aldershot and Kings Lynn maybe for that final relegation spot out of the National League. And, you know, we've seen it before come the end of the season. There may be other elements that jump into it. Hopefully not, because we like it all to be organised and sorted out on the field. But it does look like maybe the bottom three as is now may well remain the bottom three as the season goes out.
I think that was a huge win for Aldershot last week against Bournemouth. I mean, it's been looking pretty dicey for them over the last couple of weeks. Yeah, really bad run, and they've really sort of been sucked down into it, and with Kings Lynn kind of making points here and there and getting wins and kind of on this sort of resurgence and belief that was, you could see, was kind of coming in. It did sort of look like, you know, it could be had a real chance, and then one result over the weekend, the draw of Yeovil, which was a good point, but Aldershot beating Bournemouth just gives that an extra 2 points gaining on them on that Saturday, and that could be huge. And yeah, you look at those clubs who are in there, and possibly, yeah, that will be kind of them, and how it finishes. But crazier things have happened, as we said earlier. Been talking to some managers who won promotions from Step 3 over the last couple of weeks, and kind of looking forward to getting up and getting into that into those leagues at Step 2, because they know how competitive and how good they are, and they're not easy to get out of. You don't want to get relegated at the best times anyway, but knowing what you're going into and how hard it will be to get back is another factor.
And we already said that the National League this weekend are playing on Good Friday and Bank Holiday Monday. And a number of other clubs and leagues choosing different kickoffs and to play games on the Friday as well, to avoid clashing with the live FA Cup semi-final on TV, I believe at 3:30 p.m. on the Saturday afternoon between Manchester City and Liverpool. Maybe an opportunity for non-league clubs to get extra bar taking streaming the game, or is it a scheduling decision that's forced the non-league to maybe try and avoid that clash? It seems a strange decision, and I understand that, you know, the FA Cup is the biggest competition in the world, or most well-known anyway. It's just a shame that it may impact, particularly on some of the playoff finals and that around in getting crowds through the doors at non-league level.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I don't know a huge amount about it. I didn't even particularly realise that the game until the other day that game was kicking off at half through the semi-final. Obviously, I know that there was travel issues, wasn't there, for Liverpool and Man City fans to talk about when they move away from Wembley and all that kind of stuff. So I guess that's kind of coming into it as well. The fact that, you know, there are so many, I think there's rail problems for the Liverpool and Man City fans getting home. So that's going to be one of the considerations. But when it is, obviously, it has meant that the broadcast ban has been lifted. So yeah, there's a mix of views among clubs in London. Some want the ban lifted so that they can stream games. Mm-hmm. Others not so much. It's kind of one of those subjects where everyone's opinion that gets. It might affect. I think most people who sort of, you know, what's their non-league clubs anyway, will kind of still go and do that. And, you know, I've seen a bit about the final day of the Premier League season being on the same day as non-league finals day. But, you know, you look at the sort of the take-up of what fans, you know, who are going to go and what it means to the people who go. If you're really interested, kind of go as well. I mean, it's just, I guess it's that sort of added eyes that it doesn't quite come onto it. But no, you know, it's happened before. I remember the famous Sergio Aguero Manchester City moment was on the same day as the FA Vars final. I can't remember what year it was, but I remember the FA Vars final finishing and going to the toilet and popping through the press room and seeing that Man City weren't winning the league and came back out and they'd won it. So, you know, it's not the first time. There's just so much football in this country that you're always going to get clashes against.
Indeed, and I think you're right. If you're a non-league fan, you know where you're going to be enjoying your football, particularly if the weather's nice. You know, I'm sure non-league grounds up and down the country are going to be fairly packed, and their bars as well, whether they've got a game on or whether it's just watching the streaming of the FA Cup semi-final. A bumper weekend of football then across Easter weekend. Plenty going on. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's edition of the non-league paper?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I've driven past quite a few petrol stations. I might not make it home at the moment. Lots going on. I've spoken to Gary Elphick at Hastings. They won their Ipswich South East last week, and kind of a big moment for the club. They were sort of top of the league for the last two times, and the season's been curtailed. I guess they sort of feel they've got their rewards. It's been the same for Worthing. I spoke to Adam Mitchell, with manager there, kind of been waiting and to kind of go over the line. It's sort of 10 points clear, and they've only just kind of got there because Bishop Stortford have been on an unbelievable run. I think they had 11 clean sheets in a row, Stortford, and just kept pushing, making Worthing work for it. But, you know, they've still got targets of Worthing. They can still get 100 points, 100 goals, so they're still trying to keep their foot down to the end of the season. But yeah, so lots of reaction there. Also kind of speaking to some of the Step 5 clubs that have won promotion. Can't do them all at the same time, but just got a few more of those, like Brisbane Rangers, New Slavs, story again, Sunday League a few years ago. Now they're at Step 4, they played Sunday Cup not long ago, and best Sunday League teams around made the step into Saturday football, and a few years later they're going to be playing at Step 4. So yeah, lots going on, plenty of stuff, and all the good Easter weekend action as well.
Well, we look forward to reading the paper alongside our Easter eggs. I'm not sure that Easter Bunny do deliveries of non-league paper. Maybe that's a request for next year. But Matt Packock, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, Tim. All the best.
That's it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests as ever, and thank you for everybody for listening. Before I go, I must offer congratulations to Worthing owner George Dowell, who you recall we had on the show a few weeks back, and congratulate Worthing and everybody involved on their promotion from the Isthmian League. Another details we tell every week, don't we? We tell these tales every week about the magical properties of non-league football and the magical people behind the clubs, and hopefully some more inspiration this week with the tales from our guests this time around. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on the social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, happy Easter, thank you, and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.